Hello and welcome to the Golf Practice Podcast. My name is Andy Hayes, and back with me is Ty Libby.
Good to be back, Andy.
It was fine without you. I have to say that it's about Chris, so we can't say that it was worse without you, because that would make Chris and Danny
feel bad. I
understand.
I haven't listened to it yet, but I'm sure it was great.
It was good. We got a lot of good stuff. And also back with us is Jansen Mizorek for the Jansen Project Part 3.
Hey, guys.
Hey, last time you said howdy.
Howdy. But how y'all doing?
Yeah, really play up the character that you're a Texas golf instructor.
That's right.
Today, we're talking about putting and many other things. But before we get into that, Jansen and I am trying to even think about how to describe our evening last night at Canal Shores.
I don't know if there's words that can describe it.
So maybe we'll do our best. Eric Anders Lang, who has a golf podcast and is the host of Adventures in Golf and Fried Egg Golf, a golf architecture blog, hosted a meetup at Canal Shores, my favorite course in the world, and also the place that we host a lot of our programming. And so maybe Jansen, you can talk us through what that was like.
Yeah, it was really cool. We've been following those guys for a while. I know I've been following Eric for a long time, and I've stumbled across his YouTube series, of course, on YouTube, because I'm on YouTube all the time. But what a great show. And I think, what are they on, season 3 now? Season 3, I believe. And what a cool show, what he does with his small crew and just traveling around. And it was really cool that they stumbled upon Canal Shores and did a meetup with that. And unfortunately, Andy and I got there a little late, so we didn't get to play with them. But they had, how many people? 27?
27.
They played as a 27-some. And they just kind of walked around Canal and just hit shots. Nobody really finished out. It was a very relaxed atmosphere, which you would expect with those guys. Uh-huh. And just enjoyed the course and conversation and hanging out. And there were dogs running around. And
it was
fantastic. It was a really cool thing.
It's everything golf could be.
Oh. So Canal Shores has gotten some publicity lately in the Golfer's Journal and other places, but maybe we should tell folks a little bit about what it is and their mission, since you guys are down there much more often than I am. What do you think? What is Canal Shores?
Canal Shores is an 18-hole golf course in Evanston. It's over 100 years old. It's right along the canal, I think North Branch of the Chicago River. Mm-hmm. It's owned by the Chicago Metropolitan Water Reclamation District.
Yeah.
Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah.
It's a mouthful.
It's a mouthful. But they kind of entrusted it to, I don't know, someone.
The community.
The community. And it's a nonprofit organization. And yeah, which is strange for a golf course.
Yeah.
So they don't get any tax money or anything. They do fundraising. They open up their course for tailgating before Northwestern football games. So it's right near the stadium.
They have an American Legion Hall there.
American Legion Hall.
And we operate our classes out of that location.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a real, the course just goes up and up the north and then turns around, crosses the canal, comes back down. And canal, I mean, it's a pretty big, good-sized river thing that you're crossing.
Canal
makes it sound, I don't know, small, but
yeah, I would agree. But it's cool because if you look at it on the map, it's just this little sliver of land. Because it runs literally along the canal, and it's kind of looks like a links course where the front nine goes out and the back nine comes back in. And what's the par on it? 63?
60.
Oh, 60. Yeah, so it's like 16 par threes and a couple
lots
par fours.
Lots of challenging short holes.
Yeah, it's there's really cool. Hole, let me think about it. Hole six is like a 220-yard par three.
Yeah.
But then also, it has hole 12, which is a 220-yard par 4. That's not 12. It also has hole 15, which is a 220-yard par 4. So that gives you a sense of what the course is like.
Yeah.
It's kind of quirky. But they just treat it as a public park and have people walking around all the time. It's maybe the only course in America where you could get away with playing a 27-some with the general manager of the course and other people just hanging out and just having the best time ever. When I went to Scotland this summer, the course that all those courses are also public parks, like St. Andrew's Old Course. They're closed on Sundays so people right. can picnic. And Canal Shores reminds me most of those courses, not because it's wide open or has, you know, deep bunkers, but just because of it. It feels like it has a sense of place better than any other course.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a course that's in the middle of a field or was built using tons of equipment and bringing in dirt and stuff like that. It's just, here's the land that was there, and they made a golf course on it, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, part of the community. It runs through the neighborhoods. Yeah.
And it's embraced by that. Like, there's people walking dogs, there's people walking. There's so many places or golf courses you go where if there's anyone on that course who's not a paying customer, it's like, get out of the way. Right.
I think community is the perfect word to describe it, because when you're there, you know you're a part of a group of people that one, just enjoys being outside in nature, and two, enjoys the game. And that's what I think last night was really about. And just everybody was there because they wanted to enjoy each other's company and hit a few golf shots, which is cool.
Golf shots, they had their drone going.
Yeah, that was cool.
Stuff. Yeah, maybe it's not that cool. I've never seen drones often, so it's cool to me.
But, it is cool.
And you too. Afterwards, we just hung out by the fire, had some pizza, told stories. They're really just, Eric was nice to talk to. And
yeah, lots of all stories. Those guys were, yeah.
They just love golf and love the community that comes with it.
What did Eric think about the course? Did he say?
He said, "This is my jam."
When we first came up there, Andy asked him, he said, "What do you think of it?" And he goes, "This is my vibe, man. Yeah, like, I love it. I love it."
He loved it. I mean, how could you not love walking around with 30 people or so?
And you got to meet his dog?
His dog, Snowball, was there. Very well behaved. Not on a leash, just always walking around.
Cool dog.
Yeah, very nice dog. I'm trying to think of anything else to say.
No holes in one or anything?
No hole in one. Oh, I guess Tejas Bockwell, who is one of our summer staffers, he made an eagle, his first ever eagle. He chipped in front of 27 people, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Well, should we get into it?
Let's do it.
We talked about putting today. Got a putting lesson. Ty also got a putting lesson. Jansen, you are known at the golf practice as the putting master.
I don't know about
that. The short game guru.
Have you always been a putting master, or has it been a recent thing?
I don't know how to answer that. It's like you calling Pete the golf... What would you call Pete?
No, I didn't call Pete anything. Chris Olerking calls Pete the godfather of golf. And
yeah, it's like, oh man, am I really called that? No, I love putting. I think putting's fantastic, and I'm glad that I've been able to share my passion for putting, if you want to call it that, with the kids here at the academy, because it's always been a strength of my game. Because growing up, I was never a long hitter of the golf ball, and so I had to have it to scrap around together, should put a decent score up on the board, whether that was in tournaments or just playing for fun. I had to have a great short game, and so I've always had a huge respect for people that that know how to putt well or can putt well, and know how to, quote unquote, my favorite quote is, get up and down from a trash can. So I had tremendous respect for the short game in general, and I think that's why I've gravitated to it as an instructor, and enjoy instructing it, just because I enjoy it so much. So
cool. Ty, how's your putting game?
I was talking with Jansen about it earlier. It's based too much on feel, and so Jansen gave me some pointers and some tips as far as my setup and just becoming more focused on the skills that I need to make a consistent, solid stroke. So, you know, some days I'm on, other days, most days I'm not on, I'm off, just rely too much on feel. So I'm hoping to improve that. And unlike Jansen, I do not love to practice putting. So he gave me some drills and whatnot that'll hopefully change that.
Got it. Jansen, how were these putting lessons for you? You gave us each a lesson.
Yeah,
can you give us a little summary and maybe a comparison?
Absolutely. So, Andy, I'll start with you because I gave you your lesson first. Yeah. And Andy, we've actually kind of been working together recently, the last, I don't know, month or so, just little tips here and there for your putting.
I guess you gave me a preview lesson at Lake Bluff
a
couple weeks ago.
Yeah, we were setting up for class.
I was hitting some putts. He was on the opposite end of the putting green, and I'm just like, Jansen, and I keep doing this or something. And he's like, stand farther away. You know, he shouts it from across the green. And so I stood further away and started hitting some good putts.
Yeah. So Andy's set up, he stood very close to the ball and has a very narrow stance. And so that kind of forced the heel of the putter to be up in the air. And then his stroke had to compensate for that because the putter was not lying flat on the ground. So he had to basically cut across the ball to push it back online, just because of the way he was standing at address. So he's really done some great work and fixed that. And so today in our lesson, we were able to get more onto the technical side of his stroke. And I asked Andy what was the miss that he was seeing with his putts. And he said, well, I tend to see everything miss on the left side of the hole, or I hit a pole and it feels like this and I can feel that it's off the toe. And so I was like, wow, that's great information. Let's take a closer look at what's producing that. And we found that it was your upper body was kind of chasing after, not kind of, but it was chasing after the ball. So basically Andy was watching the ball rolling, but he was watching it with his body, not his eyes or not his head. So his body or his posture was coming out of the putt too soon, and that was not allowing the face or the strike of the putt to give it the best roll and not start on its target line, which is really important with putting. So we threw up a couple barriers, which is what I love to do, and there's 1,000 different ways to set up what we did with you today. And then we also worked a little bit on tempo and just how to stay stable with your body through the putt, mm-hmm. which was pretty cool. And then with Ty, we just focused up on setup. And I was telling Ty, it's amazing if you can perfect your setup and your dress position like you have, Andy, how the stroke itself can get cleaned up automatically, because then your body is allowing the putter head to be swung and you're not carrying the putter head through the ball. And so that was really cool to see that we just made some adjustments with Ty's body and setup and really understood what he needs to be able to do and measure, how to measure it in his setup. And then his stroke was just 1,000 times better.
So I don't know about you, Andy, but I was taught always, you know, straight back, straight through, shoulders moving, but nothing else. So it was interesting to learn about the arc in the swing and how, if you're set up properly, mm-hmm. that arc naturally happens as opposed to me trying to make it happen, which was leading to a lot of inconsistency.
Interesting. Yeah, I think I've heard straight back, straight through, and I think that I try to go straight back, straight through, but I just think if it's kind of impossible to actually do that.
It is right? Impossible. Yeah. Because,
especially on long putts.
Especially on long putts, because then your elbows are going to start flying. And that's a huge, I was telling Ty in our lesson, that's a huge debate when it comes to putting instruction that, you know, is there an arc? Should there be an arc? And the answer is yes, there has to be, because we're standing away from the ball and the ball is stationary. And so there has to be an arc, and it's produced because of the angle of the shaft coming out of the club head. Mm-hmm. If the shaft was straight up and down, then yes, you could be straight back, straight through. But because there's an angle and we're standing far away from the ball reaching, there has to be an arc. Mm-hmm. And then like what you said, Ty, if our setup can be proper, then that arc naturally happens and you really don't have to think about it, because when people try to change their putting stroke to having an arc, well then they try and force it and the face is doing all sorts of stuff, mm-hmm. and it's just a disaster.
Yeah, and to have an arc in your putting doesn't mean different people have different levels of arc in their
Correct.
stroke. Like Phil Mickelson will have a very more pronounced arc that mm-hmm. you can notice as you're watching on TV, but someone else is, I mean, even like Stenson is very straight back, straight through, but there still is some arc in it just because there has to be, you can't.
Correct. And I think that comes from how much face rotation is happening. You look at Tiger, his face rotation is huge. Like he has a lot, he really opens and closes it. And then someone like, I'm trying to think, you know, Ricky Fowler has a lot of face rotation. But like a Bryson DeChambeau doesn't. He tries to take as much of that out as possible because he thinks that's a variable that is leading to inconsistency. Same with Phil. He keeps it kind of low to the ground and shut the club face and then comes through. So, but if you look at it and you can draw some lines and get some videos from those guys, it has an arc.
Has an arc.
Yeah.
What do we talk about? So that, does that cover all?
So maybe Jansen, talk about a little bit how you started with us, how you set up, you wanted to see us hit some 5-6 foot putts and reasons why.
Yeah. So the first thing I like to do, just like in our full swing lessons, I like to see a new student chip for the first time, just to watch their small motion in their hands. And so what I like to see, students do when I give them a putting lesson is watch them hit anywhere from 5 to 8 feet in a straight putt. So I can see, I want to take all the break out of it, and I want to see if the player is pulling or pushing or compensating, doing something in their stroke to like push it back online or something like that. And can they start the ball online for a dead straight putt? And a lot of the times you'll see people that say, oh man, I struggle with my lag putting, or I struggle with really short putts. So I want to give them something that's like a medium putt where they have to make a decent sized stroke. So one, I can see it as an instructor, and then two, it's short enough to where it's straight and we don't have to worry about too many other factors.
Yeah.
So I think one thing also too, that, that I like to try and focus on or get a sense of with a student when they come to me for putting is understanding what they want to work on. Is it your short putts? Is it your lag putts? Or maybe everything looks pretty good and you just need to work on your pressure situation. So I think that's three different ways that you can categorize putting practice. And I think for today, both of us were, or both of y'all were working on your stroke itself. So very block practice and very structured or technical. And so there's a time and a place for that. And that's when you can set up gates and tools and use training aids. And you have to recognize, hey, I'm working on the stroke here, not necessarily trying to get it in the hole. I'm not really focusing on how many putts I can make. I want to focus on the stroke itself. So when you do that, maybe don't even putt to a hole. I think that's great. And then the second one being lag putting and distance control and things like that, and judging speed. So like feel control, or feel practice. I think that's a whole nother aspect. And so, green reading comes into play for that as well. And then the last one being pressure practice. You know, once your stroke is all fine-tuned from all that block practice and you have the feel from your feel practice, well, then you have to be able to simulate the pressure and something that's realistic to being on the course, you know, creating a short game course for yourself, like the impossible course that we set up with the kids all the time. And forcing yourself to see if you can do something under pressure is, you know, simple as that. So things like, you know, the impossible course, where if you fail at one station, you got to go all the way back at the very beginning and then work your way through those 10 or 12 stations, or throwing 6 tees in the ground from various distances, anywhere from 3 to 8 feet, and see how many times does it take you to make 8 putts in a row or 6 putts in a row, going in an order. So, you know, that can be extremely frustrating, and it's supposed to be frustrating, a drill like that, but that's how you're going to get better.
So you mentioned training aids and drills. How much do you use video when you're practicing on your own?
Practicing on it for putting?
Yes.
So video, it's hard to kind of do on your own, I guess. I'm trying to think of the best way to answer that. I think for video, as an instructor, I like to use video a lot, so that I can show the student what it looks like, and then they can put that towards what they're feeling. Because a lot of the times you know, we were talking about eye line in our lesson, Ty, of how much bow we should have from our hips. And a lot of people think that they're going to fall over. And then I show them on video, I'm like, well, look how comfortable and athletic you look. And it's really not. And they're like, okay, well, I just got to get used to it. And it's like, okay, yeah, absolutely. Because you were so used to just standing straight up and relaxed. Mm-hmm. And so video is very important for that, to just show them that what they're doing is good and they can trust you. But using video on my own for putting, I don't really use it too much. I rather set up something on the ground that's visually going to help me rather than, using my phone. Yeah.
Well, speaking more generally about putting, are there any major misconceptions that people have about putting stroke that you've seen throughout your teaching?
Well, going back to straight back, straight through, I think everybody believes that to some extent. And unfortunately, a lot of PGA professionals believe that too. And it's, you know, maybe that's good for two footers, you know, just trying to keep it simple, and that's totally fine. But understanding the stroke itself is just important, and then you can understand. One thing that actually is that's kind of cool to think about with putting is attack angles. And so how is the putter head coming into the ball? And so in our lesson, Andy, I had the line. You know, we had a line on the ball. And you see a lot of tour pros line, you know, they're lining up their putt, and they have that sharp black line on the ball, and you can see it roll end over end. So it looks like the ball's like cut in half. It's really cool. If you ever see somebody use the line and it doesn't look like it's in a straight line, it's the ball is wobbling and that line looks all messed up, well, then their stroke isn't really in a great spot. So using that simple line can tell you, is your stroke in a good position or not. If you can get the ball to roll end over end, well, then your stroke's in a pretty good spot. But if you're practicing and you can't get that thing to roll end over end, well, then maybe it's time to bust out the video or seek out some instruction to see what's happening. So, and that goes back to, you know, right, how are you striking the putt or the ball with your putter, and that's producing that wobble or a pure end over end roll.
Yeah, from our Stan Utley Clinic and other golf practice philosophies, I've got two misconceptions that I'll share that I like, and you can talk about them.
Bring it on.
The first is, Ty, did you talk at all about the backstroke or the your backswing of your putter compared to the follow through?
Oh, that's a good one.
I've heard Jansen talk about it before, but I don't think we talked about it today. It was much more simple and about the stance.
Okay. Because if you ask most people which is longer, right, the back or the follow-through, or are they the same, most people will say they're either the same or even that the follow-through should be longer. Yeah. But it should be the backstroke should be longer, almost like a pendulum coming into the ball. Because, and the reason that the follow-through is shorter is because you're hitting something on the actual strike. So, of course, it would slow down the momentum. I'm not a physicist, but
takes away energy.
Yeah, it takes away energy. Yeah. So that should kind of be built into the stroke and how you see it.
So when you're taking practice swings or practice strokes with your putter, you should rehearse same distance back, same distance through, and then understand that when you hit the ball, that the follow through will be shorter because you're putting energy in the ball, and that's what makes the putter head stop shorter. So you don't really want to rehearse longer and then shorter in the follow through, because then you're going to kind of start to find yourself decelerating, and that's not good. You're going to start leaving putts short, and then you're going to go short long to try and compensate for that. So yeah, you want to rehearse same distance back, same distance through, and then understand the physics of, okay, I should have a little bit of an abbreviated follow through if I put energy into the ball.
Yeah. But that also though, how like hard you swing your putter impacts that too though, right? Because then it gets even more complicated if you're factoring
in. Yeah, absolutely. Right? That's the next step. And so then you need the bust out the metronome, and you'll hear that in our lesson. Mm-hmm. Cause I was snapping and giving Andy a tempo to work with, because yeah, that's a huge factor with it. Because if you're changing the size or the shape of your stroke, well, then you're going to get confused with the tempo, that it should be at too.
Yep. My second misconception, I thought from Ty, about your putting should be only in your shoulders. Mm. That they talked a lot about it is a combination of your shoulders and your wrists.
Right.
And I am really fascinated by this idea because I think it's something speaks to something bigger in golf instruction. As most people who are picking up a golf club for the first time, whether they're a kid or something else, they're using way too much wrist, right? And that their stroke is all over the place and the ball is going all these different ways. And so Golf Digest or Golf Channel or anyone will say, don't use your wrists at all, only use your shoulders, and that will help you get it online. So that's good for a basic teaching, but it only can get you so far.
Right.
That then the next step is it's a combination of your wrists and your shoulders. And yeah, I guess we talked about that in the first Jansen project, right? Of like, is there a progression of things you have to learn, and maybe in the putting stroke, that's one example.
I think so. If you look at the U.S. kids, the U.S. kids curriculum, and some of, in like the first tee, and what they're teaching very, very beginner students to do is have a Y setup, and then same distance back, same distance through. And how do you do that? Simply is is rock your shoulders. And there's nothing wrong with that to begin with, because it gives you a solid foundation and something concrete that you can follow with. But you're exactly right. You get to a certain level and you got to get pretty darn technical with it, which is cool. But you have to recognize, at least as an instructor, when is the right time to introduce those concepts.
So what does adding the wrist back into the stroke, what does that do?
So I'll have to kind of quote Stan here, Stan Utley. And he says that using your wrist is better to take the club back than your hands, because you're trying to swing the putter head and have the putter head travel as fast as possible so that it has the energy that's going into the ball. And if you use your hands, then you're literally carrying the putter back and carrying the putter through. The grip is traveling a long way. And so if you think more of a pendulum and the top of the grip, or the butt end of the putter, that's basically staying stationary and the putter head is moving the most. Well, then watch your hands. Your hands aren't going to move very much, but your wrists are moving a lot. And so it's a lot more wrist on the way back. You release that back to center, and then you kind of use your shoulders on the way through to stabilize everything.
So in putting, it's more of a swing rather than a carry.
Yes. And it's what Stan would say is it's wristy, not handsy.
Yeah.
Which is kind of might take you a minute to think about that, but yeah. It's wristy, it's not handsy.
Because in the full golf swing, there has to be some carry.
Correct.
I mean, lots of carry, I guess, right?
Yeah,
you're moving the grip in a long... grip is moving... The butt end of the grip is moving a big distance, but in putting, it doesn't have to move very much at all.
But think about the full swing as well, with the takeaway and hinging, like what we've worked on.
It's similar.
You used to carry the club to your takeaway position, and now we're breaking your wrist to be able to do that. So it's just angles and physics.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
It's crazy.
No one's talking about this except us. That's what we're here for, breaking our way into the golf world.
Wristy, not handsy.
Yeah.
Jansen, do you have a favorite putter, a favorite professional that you like to watch?
Oh, great question. I love Ricky Fowler's stroke. I really do, because it reminds me of the things that I like as an instructor that I look for, and it's very wristy, and he puts a lot of energy in the ball. You see Ricky Fowler from 8 feet. If he's got a pretty level putt, that thing's going in with some serious pace. And I really like that. He's an aggressive putter.
He has a narrow stance, and you corrected my narrow stance.
Yours was more narrow than him.
No way. His feet are together.
Let's get some pictures.
On the opposite end of that spectrum, Kevin Kisner, who I like to watch, he has a very wide stance, or relatively wide stance. So
or Matsuyama does as well.
Right. What about you, Andy? Favorite putter?
Ricky. Yeah, that's who I liked. That's why I had a narrow stance. And then in my lesson, I got told not to have one. And then he says back here that that's who he likes. So I'm really confused right about now.
Next lesson, we'll dive into you and Ricky. You versus Ricky.
But he also, do you know, he's short.
He's very short.
I don't know his height. But he uses a 35-inch putter. Mm. And so he can keep those arms nice and bent.
Right.
Whereas I can't. I'm too tall. I would need a longer putter to do that. But once I've tried using a longer putter, but then I feel like I lose all control.
So. Ricky is 5'9", for the record.
He's 5'9"? Oh, he's taller than me.
Wow. Okay. But what size putter do you have?
I use a 31-inch.
Wow, really?
31 or 32. Wow, I'm actually in between.
Really short.
Yeah, I'm actually in between a few different putters right now. I brought a few home from me from Texas, and I put some new grips on them, and I cut a few of the shafts down. And then one of them, I took it was a counterbalance putter, and I took the grip and the weights off of it and made it more standard. And now I'm switching out all the weights in the head. So I'm just kind of tinkering right now.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, I think the one I'm using right now is 32, which is pretty short.
Yeah.
But I'm a short dude. Yeah. And I like to bow over the ball a lot and have my elbows very soft. So it makes sense for me.
Cool. Anything you want to tell people about how can we enjoy putting better?
Well, I think it goes back to what I was talking about earlier. When practicing putting, everybody says it's boring, but you have to understand what you want to work on. So try and categorize what you want to work on in your putting stroke. Do you want to get very technical, and do you want to have block practice where you're working on just your stroke? Do you want to work on lag putting and maybe create a putting course, or like a small putt-putt course, and and try and finish out, make a par, make a, you know, maybe you make nine holes and see if you can two putt all of those? Or do you want to practice more pressure situations or be, you know, have a task or a very specific drill to do, and then you can go online or call us and we'll give you something to do? And I think that's cool.
I see a lot of people on social media using gate drills. Yeah. Are you big on gate drills?
I love gate drills because it forces you, well, it doesn't, well, yeah, it does force you to start the ball online. And if you can start the ball on your intended line, it's got a pretty good chance of going in when, once you match the speed. But I think one more thing to add, and this is something I've been trying to hammer home with our juniors, especially in some of our, in like our travel league, so intro to competition, is there's really, and Chris and I came up with this, there's three things that you should really focus on in your putting setup. And it's nothing to do with a stroke or anything, but these three things in your setup will be able to help your stroke actually get into a good position. And the first thing being, is the putter head flat on the ground? And if the putter head is flat on the ground, that's going to give you the best opportunity to start the ball online, which is going to make it go where you want it to go. The second thing is, do you have some bend in your elbows? And that's just going to get the shaft of the putter running in a proper direction, and it's going to allow the putter head to swing more. And if your elbows have some bend in them, that directly correlates to having the putter head flat on the ground. So putter head flat on the ground, some bend in your elbows, and then the last thing are your eyes over the ball. And there's a thousand different ways to measure that. You can throw a mirror on the ground. You can put a ball by your eye and drop it when you're in your setup and see if it drops in front of your putter. And so that's going to allow you to see the line and see the putt from a better perspective, because if your eye line is off, then you're seeing something that's not really there. It's kind of distorted in a sense. So those three things, eyes over the ball, a little bend in the elbows, and is your putter head flat on the ground? I mean, that's a very, very three basic things, but really, really important. And if you can get those down, then you're probably going to be in pretty darn good shape.
Great. Well, thanks.
Absolutely.
Chance, and thanks for being here with us again. Ty, welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks, Jansen.
My pleasure, guys. Nice work.
Talk to you next time.